Hello and welcome to the Two Guys, Three Consoles podcast. My name is Jeremy J. Master Fowler, and with me, as always, is my co-host and good friend, Matt Leachman Leach.
Hey, Jeremy. How are you going?
Not bad, are you?
Yeah, very well. Very well for
good stuff.
A cold February evening.
Yeah, this is episode 7 for anyone that's coming.
Yeah.
And we're glad to be back again. Go through all our
going through what we've been doing for the last 7 days. Yeah.
Yep. So we're starting off with gaming news as always.
Yeah, straight into gaming news, aren't we? Yeah.
Okay. Who's going first?
I'll go first on this one. So I've got a couple of bits of news. So the players are mourning the Nemesis system in Shadow of Mordor. That game came out over 10 years ago now.
But yeah.
What WB Games have done, they've actually patented it. They patented it originally, but the patent doesn't run out until 2036.
That's mad.
Yeah, which is crazy. Even though Monolith Studios is now no longer a thing, they closed the actual developer of those games down.
Right.
But the patent stays in place till 2036 when WB Games may plan to extend it for whatever reason. So nobody can use it and before that date, which is... You know, those games came out a long time ago, relatively speaking. So it's a bit of a shame that nobody else can use that system. But I mean, the Nemesis system, for those who aren't familiar, it allowed the game AI to interact with the player to recognize what you'd done previously in the game. Like if you'd met one of the orcs before, they'd remember you. You could also assign your orcs in different tranches of order, like you could have your grunts and then you could have like your commanders and that kind of thing. That was part of the Nemesis system.
Yeah.
You could also get two to fight it out to, like, you know, ascend in rank and that kind of thing. It was actually a really good system. And off that piece of news of Monolith written down, it also means the Wonder Woman game got cancelled as well.
Yeah.
So
apparently they've already spent $100 million on that game before they come.
Yeah, obviously it's decided it's not good enough and just killed it. So yeah, that's that bit of news. The other bit of news I've got is Dragon Age: The Veilguard, which came out in October, is going to be part of PS Plus games next month.
Yeah, the base, the essential, whatever they call it, the lowest tier, the one that I've got basically.
The lowest tier. Yeah. So you'll be able to play, download, and play Dragon Age: The Veilguard if you haven't already.
Yeah.
Play it. I may consider it, although it's not supposed to be as good as Inquisition was, and I really liked Inquisition, so maybe I'll give it a try. A bit non-committal at this stage because there's a few games coming out that I want to play. So still only put only a few hours into a vow, but we'll talk about that later.
Yeah.
So what bit of news have you got?
So I have got that Sony is now the second biggest company in Japan.
It's a multi-billion-dollar company.
Yes. So Sony are still $80 billion behind Toyota, who are the number one Japanese company, and Nintendo are the 10th biggest company with $89.54 billion, and Sony's up to $153.87 billion in market cap.
Wow.
Which is pretty mad. I mean, we won't touch on it very long because it's not the most exciting thing to talk about, sort of numbers and things like that. But
it's interesting, but yeah, not that exciting.
Yeah. I thought it was interesting and worth mentioning that they did got sort of that sort of stage, and obviously not. I don't think they're going to be catching Toyota anytime soon with being $80 billion behind. But the fact that they've got to number two in the first place is still pretty impressive.
Toyota have got kind of an advantage though because they've got multiple cars across across the world, haven't they?
Yeah.
So you're never going to a console from Sony or even Sony consumer products like TVs and stereo they're still doing whatever they do. They're never going to be as big as that, are they? But to be that, you know, the second largest in Japan is a pretty amazing achievement. Absolutely.
Yeah, it's pretty big. And did you say you've got one more or was that it?
No, that's it for news for me, yeah.
The other thing was I mentioned briefly, I didn't put it on the agenda, but apparently it's leaked that Rockstar so far have spent $1 billion on the making of GTA 6.
$1 billion.
Yeah.
On one game.
Yeah.
That's unheard of, surely.
Yeah, it's mad. It's certainly, I would have thought, the most expensive game ever made. And the craziest thing is they'll probably make it back.
Well, especially if they've got a GTA Online attached to it, the new GTA Online, that's just a printing press for money, isn't it?
Well, it is, but I don't think has GTA 5 been out of the top 10 sort of worldwide really ever in the last sort of like, what, how old is GTA 5? Is it like 12 years old now?
September 2013 it came out.
Right, okay. So yeah.
Which is 11 and a bit years ago.
Yeah, so it'd be 12 years in September. So it's basically in that time, it pretty much hasn't come out of the top 10 anywhere.
They were quite uncanny, Rockstar. They had the PS3 version with the online. Mm-hmm. Then they upgraded it to the PS4 version with the online.
Yeah.
They did the PS5 version with the online.
Well, yeah, but they also had
three generations of consoles.
And then they have an Xbox 360 version and an Xbox One version and then an Xbox Series X version as well.
As well. And the PC version.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, they've done very well for themselves, Rockstar. Yeah. So I think we're moving on to what we've been playing next, haven't we?
All right, cool.
I'll let you go first because I want to hear what your thoughts are on Avowed.
Okay. So I've played a lot of Avowed this week to the extent where I've actually rolled credits.
Yeah, congrats.
Thanks. It was good. It's definitely not perfect. And I won't really touch on the bits that I wasn't as keen on just because I'm going to try my best to talk about it in general terms and avoid spoilers because I know you're still playing it.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not that bothered about spoilers, but if you've got minor spoilers, it's not a problem. I mean, what kind of build did you go for? Did you go melee, go magic? Did you
magic?
Went magic. Okay.
Something scholar was the class I chose.
Right.
So I basically ran around most of the game with the grimoire spellbook in the left hand and pokey with the right, like a sword. And then found myself that I liked the fire spell quite a lot.
Right. So did you upgrade the spell?
Yeah, a lot to the max.
Okay.
So I would set things on fire with the spell and then change to a fire sword. So after setting on fire with the spell, I'd poke them a bit with the fire sword and burn them a bit more.
Sounds like that worked well.
Yeah, that's good. One thing I did really appreciate with it, there's multiple endings. And you know the way that in Mass Effect, a lot of people complained that the ending didn't really make any difference. That you get to the ending of Mass Effect 3 and it's either the blue ending, the red ending, or the green ending. That's and it already changes the palette swap.
Yeah, because they made a big thing about the ending, didn't they? Like, the war ending and all this. Mm-hmm. It turns out it actually was just a variation on a theme, really.
Yeah. So it's definitely not that in Avowed. A big decision that I made as part of the plot was then referenced later on in the same playthrough by one of the other characters. And then they came back to it again in the ending, and it had an effect on the particular ending that I got. And I think there's different achievements linked to different endings you can get.
Right.
One of my friends, boy, he's quite young, finished it before I did. And he got the tyrant, bad ending.
Mm-hmm.
I definitely didn't get that.
Okay. So it's depending on the choices that you make.
Yeah.
A good, middle, or bad ending, I suppose.
And because I had a certain game coming out tomorrow that is probably going to be taking up most of my time for the foreseeable future, I was desperate to get it finished before then. And so I definitely didn't do all the side quests, but I did, your companions have their own quest lines. So I did, Kai, who's your guy who's the same voice as actor as Garrus from Mass Effect.
Yep.
So I did his quest line and followed that right the way through to the end. So that was done. So I definitely didn't ignore all the side quests, but my whole playthrough was 25 hours.
So you, other than doing a few side quests, you pretty much mainlines the main story.
Pretty much, yeah.
Just finding out to upgrade your weapons before moving on to a new area.
Yeah, you're supposed to, and if you don't, your companions will whinge at you.
Right, okay. They will literally shout at you saying, what are you doing with this rubbish weapon?
Pretty much, yeah. It's slightly more polite, but
yeah,
that's basically what
worse to those effects, yeah.
Yeah. And they've actually, in the patch they did recently, they've actually tuned it down a little bit so they whinge at you a little bit less.
Right. One of the things I saw, I can't remember if it was in a preview or what it was, that you do, before you move on to the next area, then you need to make sure you're prepared for next, because it goes, I can't remember the
different goes from years, yeah.
Common up to legendary, I think, the extremes.
I didn't have any legendary gear by the time I finished.
You didn't, okay.
No. And also the level cap is 30.
Yeah.
And bear in mind that I had Tuesday was my day off, and I hammered it all day Tuesday and got it finished like 11:30 Tuesday night.
Nice.
I was level 23 when I finished, having done 25 hours. So I think if you do 100% completion playthrough, like 40 or 50 hours, you would definitely hit the level cap, no problem.
Yeah, because I haven't even made it out of the first area yet, but I've got to, because I've been going down every path, exploring every building, going as much as I could, just because I wanted to experience it. I'm going to do that the whole game through, if and when I get back to it, I should do.
I did explore a lot, but you get the bounties, which are like side quests on the board in each area. I picked them all up and did about five of them.
Can your companions die, like in Fallout?
I don't know if they can. Well, so when you say die, do you mean like temporarily where you have to revive them, or properly die?
Properly die.
Right. If they can, none of mine did.
Right.
I had to get them back up again when they went down because they'd run out of health.
Yeah.
But there's no permadeath or anything like that in there.
Because in Skyrim, your companions can have permadeath.
Right.
Yeah, once they're properly dead, then they're gone. You can't resurrect them. Someone might correct me on that if they're listening to this, maybe. But I'm pretty sure once they were dead, and they should have saved from a previous time you had to go back to, then you could resurrect your character. But once they were dead, it was permadeath. I could be wrong about that. But
I don't really play Fire Emblem because it's turn-based, but isn't there a mode in that with permadeath?
Yeah. Yeah, there's a few games where there's like companions of permadeath.
Yeah.
Like in Heavy Rain, I know it's not really the same kind of game, but the choices on that you make, you can kill off like one of the characters quite early on and they stay dead for the rest of the game.
Right.
Unless you go back to a previous save and make a different choice. That was quite a good thing at the time. It's like, because me and two of the people that I knew were playing it at the time, and we all had different endings. Like eight different main endings to that game, and there's 25 endings in total for Heavy Rain.
Wow. It's another game that's got the meme with what's the character called? Is it Adam?
It's Ethan.
Ethan.
Yeah, so it's the Jason meme and the Sean meme, because he loses Jason at the beginning of the game.
Oh, so it is Jason.
Yeah, which is his older son, and then his younger son gets kidnapped.
Right.
By the Origami Killer. That's the name of the killer in the game. And his other kid's name is Sean, and he's running around going sheets, going Sean.
Did he do the same with Jason?
He does. Yeah, when he's losing Jason through the crowd. He's Jason. Yeah. It's a good game, that Heavy Rain. I got the platinum for that. I enjoyed it.
Yeah, okay. It's one of those like sort of quick time event kind of games, isn't it?
Yeah, it's like one where you got press buttons in certain sequences, hold down buttons. So it's like and also a choice game. You have choices that you make in dialogue, which directly affects how your characters progress through the game. But it's good. I mean, Quantum Dream make good games. They're working on a Star Wars game at the minute.
Yeah, that's cool. The whole press X not die for a whole game. I think would get a bit much for me at some point. I'd be like, I'd have to be so into the story to keep on with it.
Yeah, they're very, very much story driven, those games. Yeah. Anyway, kind of derailed your avowed talk. Unless you're finished.
Oh, sorry. overall, I liked Avowed. I would recommend giving it a go. Definitely, if you've got Game Pass, it's definitely smaller in scope. It's not a Skyrim. If you're expecting like a 500-hour Skyrim clone, it's not that. Right. But I still very much enjoyed it. Was just giving a go. Whether I'd paid 70 quid for it is another thing entirely, but if you've got access to it on Game Pass, there's no reason to not try it, if you ask me.
Would you give it a score out of 10?
Probably an 8.
An 8. Okay. Yeah. So pretty decent then.
I liked the story, enjoyed the ending. I don't know if I would play through it again to try and get a different ending.
No.
But I was glad that I did it.
Yeah, I'm glad you enjoyed it, and that way you saved through Game Pass, so that's a bonus, really.
Yeah.
Well, I've been playing pretty much, that's all I've been playing is Lies of P.
Hooray.
Lies of P.
Yes.
Because that's what it's called. Someone said to me, you're saying Eliza P. I said, no.
Eliza P?
Lies of P. Yeah. Not Lies of Peace. Not Eliza P. Lies of P.
Yeah, so Pete, I mean, I think the weird thing is that considering it's inverted commas Pinocchio game, no one actually says Pinocchio in the whole game.
No one ever says Pinocchio in the game.
No. So I think you are P.
Yeah.
And it is lies of the character you are.
Exactly.
So
I may have to spoil this game a little bit to talk about it. So if you haven't played the game and you're intending on playing it, maybe skip forward 10 minutes or so, depending on how long I talk for. So as I've mentioned last episode, I'm on a platinum run for this game. And I had played it before when it came out. We both did. And really enjoyed it at the time. We said how much we've enjoyed it. So I decided to go on a platinum run after watching the new DLC Overture trailer that came out on the State of Play a couple of weeks ago. I'm about 28 hours into it, and I've now added to my trophies that I've got for the game. I've now added 4 trophies out of the collection, so I'm now 30 trophies out of 43 available.
Okay,
I'm getting there. The main trophies that I got, which was extreme potential, which is activate the P organ to phase 5,
right? Yeah,
end of riddles, where you discover all the Trinity sanctums, learning about emotions, where you're learning all the gestures,
yeah,
and the story of the prince, which is found out about the last story of Vigini. Vigini is like the master inventor in the game. Playing through the game again, or I've really enjoyed it, but I think I must have mentally blocked out some of these bosses that you come across, in particular the Door Guardian. And the Door Guardian is a gimmick boss.
Yeah.
What I mean by that is, if you never played a Souls game, there's normally at least one boss in the game, which is you have to defeat them a certain way.
Yeah.
Because that's the way that the developers want you to defeat them.
Yeah.
But this Door Guardian is. Doesn't matter what your build is. Doesn't matter how powerful you are. Doesn't matter how much you've leveled up. You have to beat this Door Guardian by hacking away at his leg, his right leg, until he falls over.
Yep.
And then you get fatal blow. I can't remember what it's called. With the red circle appears in front of his head, and you have to stand in there, press R1, it does a massive attack. And you have to do that at least twice, depending on how you and you have to defeat this boss to progress the game. You haven't got a choice. You can't skip him. There's no way around it. You have to beat this boss. And I completely forgotten about this boss until today, when I came across it, and I'm like, oh, I remember this boss now.
He is a proper ball ache.
It's ridiculous. I don't know what they were thinking through the developing of this game, thinking putting this boss. Somebody's specifically put this boss in there either just to irritate players, or just to see, you know, if you've got the patience to get through it, to get through the next area, because it is frustrating.
Not wrong.
It took me probably about 10 attempts today, I think, which is not too bad, to be fair, on that guy. I don't think you'd be able to do it the first time unless you practiced it loads.
No. I can ruin your day. In New Game Plus, you have to get it 3 times instead of twice.
Yeah, I thought that was coming. Oh, well. Something to look forward to.
So I remember in New Game Plus, it took me hours, like way longer than you did the first time around.
Awesome.
Because I kept doing it. I'd do it 2, and then he'd kill me before I managed to do the 3rd one, and have to start all over again.
I think the main issue with this boss is he gives you a status effect called Shock.
Yeah.
Now, what Shock does is it massively impedes your stamina regeneration.
Yeah.
And that is, if you've got no stamina, you can't run away. If you've got no stamina, you can't get up properly. It's really hard. That's the main gimmick of this boss. So, New Game Plus, looking forward to that. Otherwise, trophy-wise, I mean, I've been kind of following the guys just to pick up everything that I didn't pick up on last time.
Yeah.
And, I got the trophy for the Trinity areas, which I didn't do in the first playthrough because, you know, you're just making your way through the game. But you have to make specific morality choices in the game.
Right.
And the guide that I'm following says either the humane choices, the humanity choices, on the non-humanity choices,
mm-hmm.
which equates to the human choices is a lie, and the non-human choices are the truth.
Right.
So that is the difference. And apparently, if you do the non-humanity choices or the truth, it doesn't make a lot of difference in the game.
Oh.
Whereas if you do the lies, it leads to various areas that you wouldn't be able to access otherwise, which I didn't
realize that.
This. No. So that's something new to learn about the game.
Hmm.
Most of the enemies are pretty straightforward in the game. Like the first few areas, playing them again, I was having no trouble. You know, first few bosses, it eases you in gently.
Yeah.
And then about halfway through the game, the difficulty curve goes up fairly steep.
Yeah.
You get to this area where there's these crystals in the ground that emanate a status effect called disruption.
Yeah.
Which doesn't harm you that much. I don't think it even takes your health down. But if your disruption bar gets full, you die straight
away. Yeah.
So you've got to watch out for that. And then later on in the game, there's creatures that actually spit disruption clouds at you.
Yeah.
And there's guys with like flamethrowers, but instead of flamethrowers, it's disruption clouds.
Mm-hmm.
So they really ramp it up for you.
Yeah.
Which is challenging, but that's the whole point of the game, right?
I mean, if you on that boss you just mentioned, you're pretty close to the end now.
Yeah, not far away. I'm not far away. I've just made it to the star... gazer at the near the top of the tower, I think. So I'm just about to go and defeat what's that boss called? What's her name? You know,
I talked about before. I think in theory that one you're about to do is inverted commas the hardest boss in the game,
Apart from the secret boss, yeah. I'm just gonna look up and while we're talking, see what the name of the boss is. Luxalia the Complete. There we go.
That's she's so
That's
ridiculously fast, that boss. In phase one isn't that bad.
Yeah.
Phase two is horrendous.
Yeah. Yeah. So
I mean, if you've got it, you know, the little summoner guy you can bring in with you for bosses, take it at him and
That's what I've been doing on each of the bosses. There's certain bosses where you can't, like the corrupted puppet master, you couldn't take in
It's annoying, isn't it?
The one we just talked about, the door guardian, you can't take one
in there.
So there's certain bosses you have to take on one-on-one.
Yeah.
I mean, it is very much a love letter to Dark Souls series. I mean, the way the game is structured, you know, the way the levels are designed is very much a love letter to that, which is good. You know, I think it's a good Souls-like type of game, as we discussed before.
Yeah.
My main reason for going for the Platinum is to have it done, finished by the time the DLC comes out. I mean, it's not going to happen this summer. But this DLC is a prequel. The character in the trailer for the DLC, the one with the big sword, this curved sword, and the like the feathered hat on, actually you see a mirage of that character leading up to the final area.
Yeah,
Which I didn't realize until today when I played it. I'm like, I recognize that silhouette. Is that non-playable character from the DLC trailer? Yeah,
that's pretty cool.
So that's pretty cool. So we'll see how that plays out. But yeah, it's been fun. Been fun / frustrating doing the platinum run for this game, and it's pretty much what I've focused all my gaming time on, and it will be until I've got the platinums. And then probably I'll go back to Avowed.
So have you crafted any of your own weapons?
I did. I follow the guide that I'm following. I'm using the big spanner head with I think it's the police baton. Because it's quite short, but gives you lots of and leveled up motivity. That's what it's based on, because you can change the attributes of a weapon.
Yeah,
and got motivity up to 30. Plus, I've got an amulet which adds another +4. Mm-hmm. So motivity is at 34. It makes it a pretty strong weapon. Because the good thing about that thing is you can use these legion pulses. It's special abilities. You hold down the triangle button. And unleashes a huge attack, which takes loads of health off an enemy. That's how I've defeated most of the bosses so far.
Right.
Apart from the door guardian, obviously. I've crafted that weapon. I've used it pretty much the entire way through the game. I think I used the electric baton for the first couple of areas because there's lots of puppets.
Yeah.
And they're weak to electricity. Yeah, puppets are weak to electricity. Humans are weak to acid. And the corpses are weak to...
Fire.
Fire. So main things.
And you touched on the P-Org, and that's like you wave, like sort of making your build sort of thing.
Right? Yeah, that's making way, making your build so you can increase your pulse charges, which is your healing items. You can increase your defense. You can increase how much you carry and that kind of thing.
Apparently, you can have a number of throwables, can't you?
Yes, you can. Apparently, there's five phases in new game. There's six phases in new game plus.
Oh, really?
And there's seven phases in New Game Plus Plus, apparently.
Oh, wow. Well, I haven't done Plus Plus, but New Game Plus was hard enough, so I can't imagine how much harder it gets the third playthrough.
Yeah, I won't be doing New Game Plus Plus, I don't think.
No.
New Game Plus would be enough for me, especially as you've been through it, and you got all the way to the end and just couldn't defeat that bloody last boss.
Yeah, so. Blimmin' nameless puppet.
Yeah.
What was the other thing I was going to say? That's the other thing. My character, I haven't touched it for ages, but of course, it will be in New Game Plus.
So I'm
in an hour about whether I want to. It depends on what kind of, if they give you an option to start the DLC from the main menu.
Yeah,
I might just do a brand new character to do the DLC.
Okay. Yeah.
But just that if I use my existing character to do the DLC, I'll have to do it in New Game Plus, which is going to be even harder than it would be normally.
You don't want to do that.
No.
You know what I might do? I'm on the PS5 version. Because you can, I still got my previous save from my previous playthrough though, so I did start a new save. So you could, did you start a new save for New Game Plus?
I can't remember, it might be the same one.
Yeah, I think if you start a new save for New Game Plus, I can't remember.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe that's a way around it. You can go back to your new game playthrough and do the DLC from that, because you're right, doing it in New Game Plus wouldn't be easy. So that's what I've been spending my time on, Lies of P.
Yeah, cool. So we veered into Platinum Watch there a little bit, haven't we? But we'll...
A little bit, yeah, we did a little bit, yeah. Do we talk about that now, or do we want to do the Retro Corner first?
I mean, if we're sticking with our normal order with Retro Corner next, but I'm happy for you to go straight into Platinum Watch.
Yeah, we'll go into Platinum Watch, since I mentioned about the trophies already.
I'll make more editing for you.
Yeah, so, I mean, I'm on course to get it at the moment. Like I say, I've got 30 out of the 43. And we had an interesting question from a guy called Mike on Discord.
Yeah.
A couple of questions, actually. He's put, what kind of trophies put you off platinum a game? As he put on the Discord, multiplayer trophies put me off
platinum
a game, because I'm not much of a multiplayer person, really. If I like the game enough, I may consider it.
Mm-hmm.
But that, you know, I might play for it, like I played through Warhammer Space Marine 2. That's got multiplayer trophies, and I probably won't play on that game.
No.
It's very unlikely I will. It's about 50 or 60 hours of platinum it, and most of that is multiplayer. So that puts me off. So he's right about that.
Mm-hmm.
What used to put me off was having to play through a game on hard or impossible mode, where you've got a trophy for each hard level. So say you played it impossible, you would expect it to unlock hard, normal, casual, whatever.
Yeah.
There's certain games that you would only unlock for that difficulty and not below, which I don't like that. That's
what you're saying, isn't it?
Those kinds of things will put me off playing them again.
Mm-hmm.
I would say collectibles, but, you know, a lot of these open world games that I played just have a huge amount of collectibles. It put me off in Star Wars, the Skywalker saga, because there's over 1,000 Kyber bricks that you have to collect, and that's I won't platinum that game, because that's ridiculous. It's just if it's like 200-250, that's not too bad for, you know, amount of gold bricks in a game that previous Lego games had. But 1,000, and it's not even that interesting either. You've got to do like stupid little side missions, like send CPO into this area so you can unlock a hatch and send R2-D2 through and get an item that gets you a Kyber brick. Like, it's boring. So, you know, things, trophies that you've got to do mundane, annoying things for.
Yeah.
Although, having said that, I did do it for Goat Simulator. In Goat Simulator, there's one of the mini games that you've got to do is a version of Flappy Bird.
Right.
Now, you only have to score 10.
Okay.
Sounds easy, doesn't it?
Hmm.
Took me 8 hours.
What? Score 10?
It's so annoying, because it's even worse than Flappy Bird because the controls on it are just ridiculous. Oh. It was the last trophy I had to get for Goat Simulator, and I'm determined to do this. Sat there for 8 hours and played this stupid version of Flappy Bird, got to six, got to seven, can consistently get to eight, then just got to nine, and I'm like nearly there. And eventually I did it. I was like, after I did it, deleted the game and not playing any more Goat Simulator.
So Goat Simulator is a bit of a weird one because they did Goat Simulator and then no Goat Simulator 2.
Yeah, because the joke is it's Goat Simulator 3. That's the joke.
Yeah.
Because they're just like that. The developers who make the games are just like, we don't need a 2. We'll just go straight to 3. Okay.
It's bizarre.
But it's not the kind of game that you would expect it to be. Like, it's just a goat running around in it. No. If you ever play a Goat Simulator, it's the craziest game I've ever played, I think.
Yeah, it's pretty bizarre.
Yeah, it's funny. It's funny.
It's funny.
And I had some fun playing it, but getting the platinum was more than I realized. But yeah, you know, those kinds of things have put me off.
Yeah.
But it also asked the question, do you feel there are some trophies that are simply there to artificially extend the playtime of a game and or makes the developers disrespect your time with arduous trophies? I don't think they disrespect your time intentionally, or at least they shouldn't.
No.
When they're making these trophy lists. I mean, achievements and trophies have only been around since 2005, 2000, with the launch of the Xbox 360, and then PlayStation patched them into games in 2006, I think.
Mm-hmm.
The GTA 4, when that launched originally, didn't have trophies, and they patched them in after it was launched.
Oh, really?
Yeah. There was a few games like that where they launched without any trophies, and when they came with the trophy system, they patched them in.
Right.
So, you know, but I don't think they do intentionally disrespect your time. None of them come across anyway.
I was going to mention, so of my six platinums, one of them is Monsanto World, which of course came out 7 years ago.
Yeah.
And then when the Iceborne expansion came out, which they sold, I think, so World got 20 million copies sold, and they sold 10 million copies of the Iceborne expansion, which means that half the player base bought the expansion, which is pretty big. It's pretty good for a DLC.
Yeah.
But the only reason I didn't get the platinum for the Iceborne DLC is because there's all these stupid trophies in there. Like, if it's just hunting monsters, playing the game, that's fine. There was some grinding involved in World, but I did it, and it took me about a couple of hundred hours to get the platinum, but I did it. It was fine. In Iceborne, they stuck all this like photography mini game thing in.
Yeah.
You have to go and take pictures of little tiny, like, not proper monsters that you fight, the little like little wildlife things.
Yeah.
And there's always things you have to take pictures of. And I was like, well, it's not monster photographer. I don't want to take pictures.
Yeah. So this is the one of the ones that Mike was saying that they're put in there to artificially extend the time. That's probably what that was. I mean, there was a similar mechanic in BioShock where you had to get a photograph of every type of enemy.
Yeah, I've done that though. That one's not too bad.
Not too bad, that one. So that didn't offer it tough, but it sounds like this Iceborne one was just there to, you know, if you wanted the trophy, then you had to go out of your way to do it.
Yeah, and I just, the whole, there's one NPC in particular that you have to interact with to do the whole photography minigame type thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I just didn't want to do it. I didn't do it at all. So I think I've got like 74% of the trophies in Iceborne.
Yeah.
The only ones left I've not got are all linked to this photography bullshit. I'm just like, not doing it.
Yeah, there's a couple of trophies in Final Fantasy VII Remake and Rebirth that are a bit like that, where you have to, I think it's in Rebirth, you have to play every mini game, and you have to, I can't remember if you've got to win, like come first on the leaderboards for every mini game or not. I might be misspeaking that, but that's just too much of a grind for me.
Yeah.
That's too much of a grind. That is artificially extending the game. Because like once you finish with the main story, you want to do the side quests, fair enough, but one of them is to go into every type of mini game and win every type of mini game. And some of these mini games are really involved as well, like their own little game.
Yeah.
Like, nah.
No.
I got three quarters of the way into Rebirth and I gave up on it because I was bored because I've been playing it for 75 hours. I never intended getting a platinum for that anyway, but we got to this bit where there's a, like a labyrinth in one of the later chapters. I think it's the chapter. Mm-hmm. I think there's like two more chapters after, and I couldn't navigate it properly because I just couldn't make my way through. And I just gave up. Mm-hmm. So when it came out April last year, and that was like May last year, and I haven't come back to it. I don't think I will, because I'm done with this game.
Or well, isn't it another one that suffers from being bloated?
Yeah, there's too much bloat. There's too much bloat in the Final Fantasy, you know, remake games, I think.
Yeah.
But yeah, that brings us to the end of that plan and watch section, I think, doesn't it?
Yeah, so we're doing Retro Corner.
Yeah, I think so. I think you should go first on this one.
Okay. So this week I've gone for Street Racer on the SNES, which was done by Ubisoft.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was the first Ubisoft game I ever remember playing.
Mm.
It was 1994.
Yeah. Wow, I didn't know they were around in 1994, actually. Ooh. Interesting.
And if I remember the marketing for this game, it was basically marketed as a cross between Street Fighter and Mario Kart.
Right.
Because it very much plays like a Mario Kart, uses Mode 7 being on the SNES, and some of our listeners might remember playing it on... It was ported to both the PS1 and the Saturn after the SNES version, but it was definitely on the SNES first, and of course... Neither the PS1 nor the Saturn have got Mode 7, but of course they probably didn't need it because they could do actual sort of early 3D.
Yeah.
And it very much plays like a Mario Kart, but it probably looks better than SNES Super Mario Kart because it released 2 years later.
Yeah.
And the Street Fighter action, or Street Fighter Street Racer Street Fighter aspect, sorry, I put my teeth in, is you can press R to hit to your right, and L to hit to your left, and then every character's got like his own like sort of weapon or special type thing you can do. Like there's a character called Hojo who's got like a magic carpet you can fly up in the air for like 15 seconds and then before you drop back down again. But none of the there's no, you know, in Mario Kart you go over and pick up a weapon from a selection that will randomly go through until you get one. There's none of that. You know, in the original Super Mario Kart, all the way the computer characters are controlled, they all have their own individual weapon.
Yeah.
It's the same in Street Racer, but for the player characters as well.
Right.
And there's no projectiles.
Oh, okay. So
whatever sort of weapon you've got, it's all melee when they're right next to you.
Right. Sounds difficult.
Well, yeah. I mean, you've got a health bar on the screen as well. And from what I remember, when your health bar gets to zero, if someone hits you enough, a bit like F-Zero, your cart will explode and you die and you lose the race. But I remember it's got...
You can respawn then once your cart explodes.
No, you have to start the race again.
Right, okay.
And it's got like your normal like Mario Kart style three cups, but it's also got a custom cup option. I remember there's got a lot of like customizable options in this game to play it as you want. So if you want to do every single track in the game, I think there's like 20 something tracks in the game.
Mm-hmm.
You can put them all in, like, you know, put all three cups in together and then just play all of the tracks all the way through.
Right.
And you can also adjust like the lap, like, so you can have, I think, you know, like 20 laps per race if you want.
Yeah.
And things like that. So there was a big thing that you could sort of just fiddle with it and play it as you wanted to. And then it had four player with the multi-tap, and the four player mode doesn't work in the normal way that four player modes work in games where it's, you know, all four corners of the screen.
Yeah.
Instead it's all four horizontal. So you get like a little letterbox for each player. So you don't get a lot of viewpoint.
Right.
But apparently the PS1 port had an 8-player mode where you had to plug in 2 multi-taps into your PS1 and then 8 control pads. And apparently it was the same. It still wasn't split up in the normal way. It was still the letterbox mode into 8 in your screen. So you can imagine how little real estate on the screen you would have if you had 8-player.
Yeah.
Which I thought was a bit mad. But I'm not really sure how well it sold. There was never any sequels or anything like that.
No,
it was just the PS1 and Saturn ports, and I think that was the last I heard of it. But I always liked it, and my friend Matt, who will probably mention a little bit later on, he and I used to play this, and I think it has ended up on. Have you ever played AntStream Arcade?
No,
there's like a little weird, it's a strange little program. It's on both Xbox and PlayStation, and you have to get a subscription, but it's got like 1,800 retro games on it.
Yeah.
From like various platforms. So for example, like when I had it, like there was like 40 or 50 SNES games, but nothing Nintendo licensed. So for example, if you have anything for Sega, don't expect any Mega Drive or any Sega first party games on the Mega Drive section either. It's always like third party games.
Yeah.
They're on that particular platform. I remember Street Fighter's in the SNES section on there. So there is ways to play it in modern ways if you don't want to emulate.
Okay.
But yeah, I used to quite enjoy the other thing I mentioned, as well as the racing for multiplayer, like the equivalent of like Mario Kart battle mode is like a rumble mode, which is pretty much just like bumper cars.
Yeah.
And then it's also got a football mode, or soccer as they call it in game, where there's like eight of you, you know, computer controlled ones if you've not got four human people. And it's everyone for themselves, just have to score the most goals for yourself.
Right.
And there's like a weird, instead of a goalkeeper, there's like a weird like bar thing that goes back and forth to try and stop you from scoring.
Right. Interesting.
I've still got a copy that still plays. So if you ever want to have a quick look when you come around, we'll stick the record.
Yeah, I have to boot up and have a laugh.
Yeah. What's yours this week?
So mine is a game called Shadow of Memories, which came out on the PS2. It was one of the first games I played on PS2.
Ironically, I don't remember at all.
No, well, it's not a very well-known one. It sticks in my memory because it is one of those first games I played on the PS2, because PS2 doubled as my first DVD player, my first PlayStation 2 console.
Yeah.
Before they shrink it down to the slim version.
Yeah.
You know, it doubled as that. And it's basically a mystery adventure game. And it was developed by Konami Computer Entertainment Tokyo and published by Konami. So they brought this game out. And it was my first taste of a Japanese developed adventure game.
Right.
Very strange game. Very odd off-the-wall game. Basically, you play a character called Ike Kusch, that's his name, and it's in a fictional town, German town of Lebensbaum, that's the name of the town.
Okay.
And basically, the game starts off with his murder. He gets stabbed at the very beginning of the game. And then this, like, genie appears and says, you've got the option to go back in time and prevent your own murder.
Right.
So you go back to various time periods. There's eight chapters in a prologue, and he dies at the end of each chapter and goes back in time to try and prevent his murder.
Right.
So the time periods that he goes to are like 2001, which is the modern era, 1979, 1980, 1902, and 1582, 1584. So quite a varied time periods that he goes to. And he meets these various NPCs, and you have to do certain things within the game to prevent your murder.
Right.
That's what the game's about. And because in those days, I mean, this is 2001, those days, like it was like decades ago, which is right. In 2001, there wasn't as many help guides available for these types of games as there was these days. It just wasn't. It's just what you had to figure out these games or just not play them. So I did not complete this game.
Right.
I don't even know if I got halfway through it, because I got to a certain point though, I was just stuck and I couldn't figure out how to move forward in the game. But the mechanics of the game were quite interesting, because you go back in time and change something in the past and then come back into the present time and it would be changed because you change it in the past. So that's the mechanic you use to try and prevent your murder. And interacting with the various NPCs across the different time periods, there was eight different endings to the game.
Right.
And only two of them unlocked when you unlocked the first six endings.
Wow.
So if you want to see the entirety of the game, I suppose you had to complete it multiple times. Mm. That's the first time I think I'd heard about multiple endings to a game.
Yeah.
I didn't think I'd heard of it prior to that. I mean, I played quite a few PS1 games, but I can't remember many games on PS1 or SNES having multiple endings to games.
No, or N64.
No, not that I can think of. So this was something very new to me. It's like, a game can have more than one ending? What?
Yeah.
What? There's only one ending to a game, and that's basically, it sets you up so you have to play the entire game again. That's what I was used to on the, the older games. Like, finish your game, start it again.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's what I was used to. But I would say it was a decent game. I enjoyed playing what I played, but it's one of those very, I don't want to say obtuse, but very Eastern style, Oriental style, sorry, East Asian style, to be correct, type of games. And it kind of put me down the path of like thinking, you know, these interactive kind of multiple ending games, multiple ways to complete a game, you know, that's kind of where it started for me on that type of game. So yeah, Shadow of Memories, or as it was known in North America, Shadow of Destiny. I don't know why they had that. It's a bit like Harry Potter and the Philosopher's Stone and Harry Potter and the Sorcerer's Stone. Because, you know, different cultures have different ways of how they think about
it. I'm sure there are some other games that we got a different title. I mean, that I've mentioned it before, Super Lest that I love on the SNES was Space Megaforce in America. Yeah. But I'm sure it's not the only one that's got different name. I don't understand why they give it a different name in PAL compared to in NTSC, but
no, I think it's just probably when they do the market research, you probably realize, you know, in certain areas, in English speaking areas like North America, Australia, you know, wherever, maybe it's just worth rebadging it as a different title.
So, I mean, it happens with films and stuff as well, doesn't it? Because like Leon, if you've seen that, is a great film. And apparently they renamed it The Hitman in America because they didn't think Americans would go see a film called Leon. But yeah, that sounds like an interesting game. I can't say I've ever played it or even heard of it.
It was interesting, yeah. There's probably no modern way of playing that game. I'm sure it didn't exist on any modern systems. No. Maybe PC? Maybe the PC? I think there was a Windows version, but would that be Windows XP, I guess?
Probably, yeah.
You could probably get it working on Windows 10, maybe. Maybe Windows 7 machine. I don't know. No. So I wouldn't like to try it.
No. So when you're saying, like, did your character get reincarnated? Then
that's one of the endings, I think. Yeah, the character gets reincarnated. It could, depending on how you progress the game, the character can get reincarnated. Right. Or that is one of the endings, I believe, yeah.
Because you just said about 2001 and then 1980.
Well, that's the time period that you can travel to. So, depending on your actions, you can get like reincarnated into somebody else in the modern day.
Right.
That's one of the endings. The other ending is it just stays permanently dead. Mm-hmm. The other ending is that it's actually the genie needs him to go back in time. So the genie gets created in the first place.
All right.
Kind of ties in with that.
Yeah,
it's an interesting game.
Yeah,
like I say, very weird games playing for my first PS2 game. But it came with the PlayStation 2, that's why I played it.
So, was it a PS2 exclusive, I take it?
Originally it was. It came out PS2. They ported it to Xbox the following year.
Right.
It came out on Windows the year after that, and there was a PlayStation Portable version in 2009.
Right. Okay.
So, yeah, it did come out on those are the only platforms that it came out on.
Yeah, so this is back in my GameCube blinkers days, and because it never came out on GameCube, that's probably why I wasn't aware of it.
Never been aware of it.
No. Right, so we're moving on to our main subject for this week.
Yeah.
Which is our experiences at EGX or
Eurogamer Expo. Eurogamer Expo, although it has been known by both names over the years.
Yeah.
As well as EGX London and EGX Birmingham as well.
Yeah.
So, names for them, and EGX Resd as well.
Oh, yes, EGX Resd is the smaller indie one.
Yeah, which is not, they've not had one of those since 2019.
Right. Okay.
So, yeah. Mm. Yeah, probably, you know, something called COVID.
So, I think you started going to these before me. Do you want to
I went to, the first one I went to was the first one that was in London, which was in 2009.
Earl's Court?
No, it wasn't at Earl's Court.
Oh, was it not?
No, it wasn't. It was at Billingsgate Market.
All right.
So it was a very small affair, very small. I mean, I'm talking one main exhibition area, which was no bigger than probably, I don't know, about what, what you could equate it to, but it was very small. There's one like developer session room, which was just a row of chairs.
Right.
A guy stood at the front.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was very, you could get your hands on with like the PSP Go.
Mm.
You could play Dragon Age before it was released, the first Dragon Age, Dragon Age Origins, I think it was called, the first one. Yeah, so that was in Billingsgate Market in 2009. That's the first one I ever went to, and I was actually, it's the first proper games expo I think I'd been to. Because they had one the previous year when they started in 2008, which was in Leeds. Oh. They may have had one in London, I can't remember. But the first one I went to was in 2009. Then the following year, 2010, that's when it started at Earl's Court,
right?
And that's when it became every year.
Yeah.
Became bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger.
Mm-hmm.
And they moved to Birmingham in 2015.
Right.
And they had a multi-year deal with the NEC. So it was there from 2015 to
2018.
Yeah. So there was four shows there, 2015, 2016, 2017, 2018. Yeah. Then he moved back to London.
Yeah.
And that's been at the XL ever since. Mm-hmm. Obviously, they had one in 2019. They had one in 2020. Obviously because of COVID, and they've had one every year since. And the little ones were at Tobacco Dock in London, a couple of them, and also they had one some in Birmingham, the resed ones as well.
Right, yeah.
So the actual experience of going there, it was actually quite a nice experience the first couple of years. You know, it was relatively accessible because of the, you know, less people. You could just rock up to anywhere and start playing at any game pretty much immediately as soon as you walked in.
Right.
You know, it was like a more intimate affair, I suppose.
Mm-hmm.
And then from about 2012 onwards, I would say, that's when it started to get a bit, you know, busier,
mm-hmm.
not as easy to get in and look at games. But the atmosphere was fantastic. That was It was the natural atmosphere, being in a place where so many people were passionate about video games.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the staff, the people exhibiting, the people who were there to enjoy the playing the new releases that were coming out.
Yeah.
You know, speaking to people. And then probably from when you went to NEC, it started to get ridiculous where you had to wait 2 to 3 hours
in
a queue to play a game.
Mm-hmm.
And that's like, this is a bit much. Not enjoying this as much now because it you're going for the games and the atmosphere, but if you aren't playing your games, then do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And then since COVID, it's not been the same. Mm-hmm. Like, and that was a knock-on effect from the thing in LA. What was it called?
E3,
yeah. So when E3 was resurrected, the big names, Microsoft, Sony, Nintendo, Ubisoft, you know, all the big developers, you know, realized they could promote all their stuff online.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they could do it through what we've got now, like State of Plays and Nintendo Directs and Xbox Showcases.
Mm-hmm.
That's what it's evolved into. So they, you know, they didn't see it worth their time or resources going to an exhibition show anymore. It didn't make any sense.
No.
Which has led to a different type of EGX where they still exhibit games, but they're either current games. There's a lot of board game people go to those things now, which is great if you like board games. I'm not a board game player myself.
No, me neither.
No, never have been. I know people out there, if they're listening to this podcast, there are board game players who love those types of games.
Yeah.
I'm not one of them.
No.
Jeremy's not one of them. So it's unlikely to have his talk about a board game here. So, you know, which is great. And yeah, I didn't go to the last one. The last one I went to was 2023.
Yeah.
Which I thought it was okay. But it's now more merchandise than anything else there now. You know, you walk around, there's people selling t-shirts, there's people selling jewelry, there's people selling all sorts of shit, like tap. Really, there's some good stuff there, but most of it's tap. So now it's an exhibition of video game related stuff
as
opposed to actual video games.
Mm-hmm.
But my overall experience at EGX when I was enjoying it was pretty good for the atmosphere, meeting up with people from the Midlife Gamer Group, which was a separate thing that they used to put on until 2019, and then there's only been one since then, I think. That costs time and money as well, so I really appreciate this. They can't do it as much as they used to be able to. But actually, EGX itself, it was positive for me until the last few. What about you?
So I went between 2012 and 2018. I've not been since you stopped being at the NEC. So the first one I went to was Earls Court. And a bit like yourself, it was always very much intertwined with midlife gamer stuff. There was always like a midlife gamer meetup. If anyone else is in Midlife Gamer who went to the one when it used to be Earl's Court, I'm sure they remember the Prince of Wales pub basically became our like unofficial base while we were there. And we would, because the Prince of Wales is like what, 5 minutes walk from Earl's Court?
It's literally around the corner from the entrance.
Yeah. And so basically if you weren't at the hotel that you were staying in and you weren't actually in the main, EGX itself, you'd be in the pub. And we just sort of rotated back and forth between those three places. You'd be pub, show floor, hotel, back to pub, back to show floor, round, round, round. Trying to think of things I remember. The one in 2012 I first went to was the last one to ever feature Booth Babes.
Yes, Booth Babes.
It's probably a good thing they did away with them because they were sort of a bit sexist.
Yeah, it was a bit sexist, wasn't it, really? You can see why they did away with them.
Yeah. So it was basically just models in their underwear that were paid by whichever developers to stand out in front of the stand and beckon gamers over to come into the stand to play the games.
Yeah.
And the thing is, like, I was already there to play the games. I didn't need a half-naked model who was
called... I need any kind of incentive like that.
I didn't really want to be there.
No.
I remember we were walking past at some point and there was like a group of like three or four of them just stood, I guess they were off duty or whatever, just stood sort of playing with their phones. And one of them looked up from their phone and gave me an absolute evil because she thought I was ogling her, I guess.
Right, okay.
And then went back to looking at her phone again. And I can't remember if it was Kyle or one of my friends that I was there who basically said, oh, she fucking hates you, didn't she? He was like, oh, what did you do?
Was look her in her direction.
Yeah.
You didn't like it.
No. So I don't think anyone really missed them when they went.
No.
I seem to remember there was a midlife game at one of the meetups. There was a quiz.
Yeah, they used to do a quiz and a charity giveaway as well.
Yeah. And I don't know if I'm remembering this wrong, but in my head, seem to think that it was like a pub quiz type thing.
Yeah.
That was all about games.
Gaming related, yeah.
And from what I remember, the team I was on came second and there was no second prize. And then, unless I'm remembering this wrong, didn't like the team that won got a Xbox 360 each?
Something like that.
Yeah. And like, I already had an Xbox 360 at the time anyway.
Yeah.
So I wasn't really that bothered.
Yeah.
But I just remember, like, I think we lost by about 3 points or something, and like it's like, well, they got a console each, and we got nada or
something. Yeah, maybe. I think one of those years I did bid on one of those charity auctions. You know, when they used to do the bids,
yeah,
you might remember it was when we was in Birmingham, I think it was 2017, right. And yeah. I bid like £100 for an Assassin's Creed figure, which I've still right. got.
Also, you won the auction.
Well, I outbid someone, I was bidding right. against somebody, and I was like, I was determined to have it. I paid wait. Too much for it. So I think it was like £100.
Yeah,
it's only probably worth about 50, but I was for charity. So
yeah, I remember one of those auctions. There was some belt that Steve-O really wanted. If you know Steve-O, and he outbid and won this belt for like it was like 250 or 300 quid.
Yeah,
and the whole thing was don't tell the missus.
Yeah. Yeah, I kind of miss those pub quizzes and charity auctions.
Yeah, they were good fun. And I always really liked the sort of meetups to get to see everyone while we were there. And like you say, majority of the ones I went to, either at Earls Court or at the NEC, you had Microsoft, Nintendo, and Sony still in attendance. They all had their own booths with games on there to show off.
Yeah.
And I think Microsoft pulled out first. So I think the last one that I went to in 2018 had a Nintendo stand and a Sony stand.
Yep.
And still had most of the major third parties on the stand, like EA and Ubisoft and people like that. But Microsoft weren't, Xbox wasn't there.
No.
Which I found a bit bizarre.
Yeah, it'd be weird.
Mm.
Yeah, the last one I went to, I think Nintendo were there. Right. They were releasing their the new game at the time on the Switch. It was a Mario game.
Mario 3D World plus Bowser's Fury?
Might have been that, yeah.
Yeah,
it might have been that. Mm. That sounds right. Mm-hmm. So the Nintendo seemed to still show up at these things. Whether right. they were there or not, I don't know, because it didn't go. Yeah. So they combined it with the Comic Con last
year. Yeah.
September, October last year, whenever it was.
And I didn't go, but from what I've heard from people who did go, it seemed to be more slanting towards it was more Comic Con than EGX.
That's what I thought. Yeah. But, you know, so, yeah.
But I don't know if it'll ever be the same or if
it won't. It won't.
Back to it again.
No, it's morphed into this State of Play, Xbox Showcase, Nintendo Direct. That's the direction that they've gone in, which you can't blame them, really. You know, if it makes business sense for them, that's what's going to happen.
Yeah. Mm. But from what I've heard from people who've been sort of post-pandemic, it's just a little bit sad. And like you say, all it is mainly merch and T-shirt stands. And maybe some indie developers?
Maybe, yeah. The indie developers always seem to show up, which some of the games are really interesting, but some of them are like, what is this game?
Like, I remember playing Man or Goat because the developer was there one year that we went and got us to come over, and it was like a phone game. So I downloaded it on iPhone, but there was an Android version as well. And basically, one of the guys making the game had made, like 50 goat sounds, and so there's like a little goat animation pops up on the screen with the noise, and you have to figure out if it was an actual real goat noise or the guy doing one of these 50 goat impressions. I don't know if it's still available. If it is, if you want to laugh, give it a download. It's great. it is hysterical. And it's not something you'd play for longer than about 5 minutes at a time, but it was really funny. Briefly, the other thing, that shout out to Kyle Disco Beaver, who was literally the only person I knew before my very first midlife gamer sort of meetup. So, because I met him through Monsanto back on the Wii in 2010. Mm-hmm. And I think his first one in 2012, he spent the entire evening introducing me to everyone that he knew because he was community manager. And a lot of these people have gone on to become like sort of my good friends that I don't see that often.
Yeah.
That's the only thing I sort of miss about not going, because it was always a good excuse to get everyone from Midlife Gamer together.
Yeah.
And because they're all from different areas of the UK, I quite often don't see them for a long period of time.
The width and breadth of the UK, isn't it? So yeah, don't get to see them that often unless you meet up, you know.
Yeah. Okay, so hot or not this week, we've got the Resi 4 remake.
Yeah, Resi 4 remake. What a game. I didn't play the original Resi 4 on GameCube like you did, because they created a PS2 version of it as well a couple of years later, didn't they?
Did. It was six months later.
Oh, right. I thought it was a couple of years.
No.
I thought the PS2 version wasn't as good as the GameCube
version. No, GameCube version is definitely better.
Yeah. So I didn't play the original. So my kind of... I did play the original on PS4 before the remake came out to see what it was like.
Yeah.
And I got as far as the depths of the castle.
Right.
Where you've got... what's the name with you?
Ashley.
Ashley with you. And Leo. Fucking hell, what's this?
It's basically escort mission the game.
Whoa, what's going on? And then these three guys, like, I couldn't get past this area. I think there was like some exploding barrels or something.
Right, yeah.
I couldn't get past the area, and I put it down. But Resi 4 Remake, coming off Resi 2 and Resi 3 Remake, I was like, yeah, I'm going to get this game and I play through it. And they've done the original game very good justice.
Yeah.
They kept the tone of the original game.
Mm-hmm.
They kept they've expanded on the areas of the original game and made it a good Resident Evil game. You know, it's fun to play. Mm-hmm. It can be frustrating. It can be exhilarating. You know, they changed the Ashley mechanic a little bit, so she's not as whiny. But yeah, I really enjoyed the Resi 4 remake. I was on course to get the platinum, but one of the trophies is you have to complete it in hard mode in under
11 hours.
Yeah, and I don't know if I can. I don't know if I can do it.
So, bearing in mind, my first playthrough of this remake of this game was like 17 hours.
Right.
And then your second playthrough is supposed to be quicker because you're skipping all the cutscenes. And I think my second playthrough was still like 15 hours. So I managed to shave 2 hours off by skipping the cutscenes, and that was it.
Yeah. Well, to get that time down, basically what you've got to do is you have to run through the areas.
Right.
And only kill the enemies that you have to kill to progress.
Right.
So ignore everything else. You get the, I think if you do it, you can do it with the infinite. On one of the playthroughs, you can do it with the infinite knife and the infinite pistol. Yeah, you have, those are the way you have to approach it. If you're going to do a speed run, you can't hang around. You've got to get through the game as quickly as you possibly can. I mean, I managed to do a Resident Evil 2 remake. I did you have to complete the game on hard in less than 2.5 hours.
Right, yeah.
And I did it in 2 hours, 20 minutes.
Wow, 10 minutes to spare.
And I had, and the very last bit is where you know, on the lift when you're got the rocket, where Ada throws you the rocket launcher.
Yeah, yeah.
I had one clip of ammo. That's all I had. I had no healing items.
Oh, wow.
And what I had to do when he lunges at you, I just had to like dodge out of the way. And I kept doing that until Ada threw the rocket launcher, and then I killed him and I managed to do it. Because otherwise it meant I'd have to go back like an hour and replay that out. And I'm like, what am I doing?
Oh, no. Yeah. I mean, Resi 2 is more sort of like old school Resi. I think the thing that was a big deal with Resi 4 at the time, on the GameCube original anyway, was that I think the version they released was like the third version of the game. I know at least one of the previous attempts, which got canned and they started over, was like there's this like weird ghost hook guy like stalking you, and it was more like the older Resi games with the fixed angles,
right?
So you sometimes end up walking towards the camera, more jump scares, all that kind of malarkey, and they threw that out completely. And the big thing for me with the remake compared to what we actually played is the GameCube original, or the one that got ported to PS2 and 7 million other consoles, you can't run and shoot at the same time.
Yeah.
So in the original, you can shoot if your feet are planted, and you can aim, or because it's all in full 3D, any direction you want, but you have to, you know, stop shooting to move.
Yes.
And you reposition yourself, and then you can aim and shoot again. And the thing is that with the... So Resi 4, the original on GameCube, was easily in my top 10 games ever.
Yeah, it was groundbreaking when it came out.
Yeah, without doubt. And it was also my argument. I had mates who were big on Xboxes who would take the piss out of me and my how's your Fisher-Price first console going? And I would take the piss out of them back saying, like, well, have you got managed to get your clothes out of your Xbox yet then? and we did that back and forth for, like, God knows how long.
Yeah.
And they would always argue to me about, oh, well, GameCube's not as powerful as Xbox, there's nothing like you can get on Xbox on GameCube. And then when Resi 4 came out, I was like, well, what is there on Xbox that looks as good as this? And that was the sort of argument back in the day.
Didn't answer, did they? No.
No. But yeah, with the Resi 4 original, as soon as you learn that it's all about space management and you just need to keep your back to a wall and try and funnel the enemies towards you in as few directions as possible. Like if you can get it to come, they're just coming to you in one direction. It's just basically like a shooting gallery.
Yeah.
And as soon as you figure that out, you're golden. You can't do that in the remake.
No.
Because they've made it more difficult because you can actually run and shoot at the same time.
Yeah. Yeah. There's some enemies in that game was like one of the, because you have boss encounters like you did in the original. I can't remember. It's not the end boss. It's the one before the end boss, I think. I was having some trouble with, because it's on different levels. It's on like three. There's like a basement level, a middle level, and then a top level. It's like, what's his name?
Is this in the original version or the remake?
The remake version.
Right.
I can't remember his name, the enemy. Anyway. But you couldn't stay in one spot, because if you stay in one spot, it just like transform into this huge monster and just like bop you on the head.
Yeah.
So you have to run around, take some pot shots at him, run around, take some pot shots at him. Mm. I found that quite challenging. But there's a bit in it, maybe a bit of a spoiler, but where Leon is running through the castle, the castle, yeah. Yeah, and he has to fight these suits of armor.
Yeah.
And they're like infected with like this, whatever it is.
Las Plagas.
Yeah, Las Plagas. And when you defeat them all, he quips 99 knights.
Yeah.
Left my ass off at that for about 5 minutes because it's so stupid but so funny at the same time.
So
he even turns around to Ashley and says, "That's just my sense of humor." And she's like,
"Yeah,
you're just weird." And he's like, "Yeah."
So the remake is, in inverted commas, better than the original. I'm aware of that. And I've played through the remake like 3 times in total now.
Mm-hmm.
So did it the first time, then did it again for New Game Plus with the weapons that you've got from the end of your first playthrough to do it again. And then flatmate hadn't played the remake, he'd only played the original, but he basically loves the original because I love the original. And I was like, "Have you played this?" And he was like, "No, I've never played it." Like, literally thrust the GameCube pad into his hands, like, "You're gonna play this."
Yeah.
And he did, and surprise, surprise, he loved it and he finished it and blah blah. So having not played the remake, he and I did pass the pad for the remake so he'd get to play it.
Yeah.
And then we did the DLC, the Ada Wong DLC. After we finished the campaign as well.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, I played it like 3 times through in total now. And there's some bits from the original that have been cut from the remake.
Oh, okay.
We talked a bit about Resi 3 before, didn't we? And
yeah.
I wouldn't say it's necessarily as cut as the Resi remake is compared to the original. Like, Resi 3 remake's got that whole clock tower section cut out of it that was in the original. Yeah. The bits that are cut out of Resi 4 are things like, there's this weird boss character called It. There's like a scorpion type thing,
mm-hmm.
that you have to fight twice, and the first time you fight it, it's like in like a corridor thing, and it sort of stalks you around, and it'll come out of the ground with its big pincer thing, and you have to dodge out of the way of the pincer.
Yeah,
because there was quite a, when Resi 4 originally came out, it was during the era when QuickTime events were really starting to get popular.
Yeah.
So the original got a bunch of QuickTime things in it. And of course there's basically no QuickTime events in the remake.
No.
So you had to fight twice. After you did him in the first bit, you then had to fight him in like sort of these platforms that fell down, and there was like a timer thing. You had to get through the door before the timer of each section went down to zero, and then when the timer hit zero, that section would fall to the ground. And he would jump across the next section and fight you again in that, and you keep doing that in all the sections till eventually you kill him. So he's missing from the remake whatsoever. He's just not in it. He's one of the very last, not the last boss, but he's one of the later bosses in the main game.
Yeah.
The first version. And then the first version's also got this, like, do you remember Salazar, who's the little Napoleon?
Yeah, that's the boss that I was fighting with those three.
Right. Yeah, yeah, okay. Yeah. So, yeah, he turns into a monster, doesn't he? And that's what you're thinking of. So the weird thing in the remake, that once he turns into the monster, if you throw the gold egg into his eye, it will one-shot him.
Oh, wow. Really? Wow.
That's bizarre. But anyway, so for Salazar, he's got this, like, weird robot statue.
Yeah.
In the original version, if you remember, it chases you, like, towards the screen, and you have to hammer the button to get away. And then there's QuickTime events where, like, things like pillars fall down and you have to roll out of the way. Keep pressing the button until you get to the end to get to the door and get out the door in time before the statue gets you. That's cut out of the remake completely as well. So they did make, like, I think some of the changes they made to the remake were decent, because the bits they cut out were a bit like, make that much sense.
The bit that I quite liked was playing was the bit in the lake with the lake monster where you're in the
Lego.
Yeah, where you have to harpoon it in its mouth.
Yeah,
that's a pretty cool bit.
With the sort of infinite amount of harpoons that you've
got. Yeah, where's he getting all these harpoons from? He's just pulling them out of his arse, you know?
So one thing I did like that they kept in the remake that was in the original, you know, when you get to the lake that Delay goes in, if you try and shoot the lake, he will come flying out and eat you whole while you're still in the bank. And that happens in the original, and they've kept that in the remake.
They kept that in, yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
Which is very clever. Cool. Yeah. And they also sort of expanded, like, so the lake in the original version is kind of small with not a whole lot going on. Whereas in the remake, it's got like a bunch of little areas to like explore and find like treasures. So the way they expanded the levels, I thought was really well done.
Yeah, it was well done. I mean, because we enjoyed the full remake. Do you think they'll do a 5 remake? I don't think they will.
I mean, it's been rumoured. I don't know if they will.
Don't think they will. They probably won't do a 6 remake either. I haven't actually. 6 is one that I have not played. I haven't played six at all. I played a few hours of 5, and I was not really enjoying this.
Have you ever tried 5 multiplayer?
No, never.
Ah, so playing 5 in 2-player co-op is really good fun.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, I played some of 5, but I own 6, but I've never played it because I've heard it so bad. It's just not, just don't play.
It's not worth it. Okay. Going back. Resi 4, obviously loved it and was nervous for the Resi 4 remake because of how much I love the original version. Yeah. And during that time, because most of my mates were PS2, and we're all like, oh, GameCube's kiddie console, blah, blah. I would literally, like, they'd come around to see me and I would make them play Resi 4.
And they were like, oh.
And I actually had one friend at the time who basically had a PS2 and he went out and bought a GameCube with Resi 4, especially
Wow.
just because of how good it was.
Yeah.
And at that time, he didn't have a PS2 port news or anything at the moment. What's his name? Shinji Mikami.
Yeah.
Who was the original Resi guy who did Resi 4 and then also went on to do Evil Within with Tango Gameworks, or whatever they're called. He was famously quoted as saying that Resi 4 will always be GameCube exclusive, and if it ever comes to PS2, he will cut his own head off with a chainsaw.
But well, you're no longer alive then.
No. That's the thing. So Resi 4 claimed to PS2 because Capcom said so, and he's still very much alive. There's never been any chainsawing.
Funny,
that. Yeah. Was so into Resi 4 that we had a Resi 4 day back in the day for the original. And Matt, who will get a mention later, was someone else who Matt is the biggest Resi fan I know. He was so big on the first game that when we got the remake of Resi 1, we had this game where basically make it into, like, Dream of Nightmare, like the ITV.
Yeah, remember it well. Yeah.
Right. So when I got the Wavebird for the GameCube, which was like the first wireless controller, and it would work properly, not like any of this infrared stuff. So the game was stick Matt out in the corridor where he couldn't see the screen with the Wavebird, and then he could still play the Resi 1 remake and know where to go and how to dodge the zombies and to get stuff, even though he couldn't see the screen. So that shows you how much of a big Resi fan Matt is. And when Resi 4 came out in the States in the January of 2005, and then in typical fashion for over here, they made us wait till like the March. So we had a Resi 4 day planned for the March.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember on the day, we both got the day off because we were so excited to go and get it. And there was like a knock on my back door at like 9 in the morning. And it was Matt in a leather jacket. And he was like, I haven't slept. I was too excited. I've just stayed up and drunk all night till it was time to come round. We went and got our copies from GameStation. In fact, it might even been before 9 because... yeah, we were at GameStation for 9 when they opened. We were knocking on the door waiting for them to let us in. And we were literally the only two people there dying to get a copy of Resi 4. No one else was that excited.
Wow.
And we went home and played it all day, so that day. Resi 5, we had the same sort of deal. We had a Resi 5 day planned. And we someone bought their 360 round and we linked them up with two TVs and played co-op together, or taking turns to play co-op between the, because I think there was probably about 5 or 6 of us, and played a lot of Resi 5. And the thing is that Resi 5 isn't a bad game.
Mm-hmm.
It's just not Resi 4.
No.
Because the bar was so high for 4, unfortunately 5 couldn't quite meet up to it, even with the multiplayer. The multiplayer is really good fun. But I remember isn't there a bit near the end, because you Chris Valentine in 5, and he punches a boulder?
Something like that.
Yeah. That was a bit bizarre. And then Resi 6, I rented it from Love Film. And I think they sent me it pretty close to launch. And it's got like 3 campaigns going on at once in Resi 6. So you've got a Leon campaign, And then I think, is it a Chris campaign?
I think so. I think Chris is in it, yeah.
And there's another male character as well.
Yeah.
And whatever the third male character is, you seem to spend all your time running away from like nemesis style bad guys.
Yeah, it's not that well done, six. So I've never actually played it, but like
it's bad. Like I said, I did, considering how much I love the previous games, I did 4 hours of multiplayer in six before we decided this isn't worth it. And we sacked
off. I think that's why they went back to the drawing board with seven.
Yeah.
And took their time. Because when it was first announced as first person, I'm like, first person is an evil game? Really?
Yeah.
It works really, really well.
It's scary. I remember playing the demo for seven and I had to put it down. I tried playing the demo with the lights off. And it's that demo where I didn't play the kitchen one, but I played the one where you see them go into the basement on a video.
Yeah.
And then you're supposed to go into the basement yourself. I was like, I don't want to go down there.
I'm going down
what
there.
Happened to them when they went down to the basement? Scott, stop that.
Yeah. But no, Resident Evil 4 remake, definitely a hot.
Yes, without doubt. No question.
So then you've got an email to read out, haven't you?
I have. I need to preface this before I read it that this is from one of my friends who is that much of a close friend that I was actually his best man at his wedding.
Okay.
And so he's like about a year older than me. So I'm basically his surrogate little brother.
Right.
And he is my big bro, Matt. That's what we call each other. Cool. So I'll read out what he said. He's put, hi, little bro Jay and Matt. I thought I'd better explain the little bro Jay bit. I'm loving the podcast. Keep up the good work. Always good content. I'm loving the back and forth between you guys. Having played X about of hours of Avowed now and had the dude behind the counter at my local shop bemoaning the fact that, well, it's not Skyrim, is it? You can't fire arrows up in the air and see where they land. You can't break everything on the table. It's 10 years since Skyrim and it's a shit version of. He's never even played Avowed and just spout whatever he's heard about the game without any knowledge of it. Deep breaths, sorry. it's brilliant to hear you guys... hear what you guys like and more importantly appreciate this game. This is most definitely a brilliant and beautiful game. It definitely has me hooked. I enjoyed my one and only hunt with Jay on the Monster Hunter Wilds beta that we managed to get in on the first one. We didn't get Arkveld murdered, but we gave it a good go. Good luck on your new platinum goal, Matt. I didn't even manage to finish Lies of P despite hope and encouragement from your co-host, lol. Jay and I have had plenty of discussions about Souls games. I'm sure he'll tell you about the struggle with Ornstein and Smough. Yeah, bless him. He got to Ornstein and Smough on Dark Souls 1, never beat them.
Some bosses, you know, no matter how hard you try, you just can't get past them.
Yeah, it friggin' did my nut in. A bit like the Omega Pirate in Metroid Prime, where I gave up for 3 months, three times after getting to that boss, and then beating my head against him for a week solid.
He's hard, that Omega Pirate.
He is really hard, isn't he? When I finally beat him, I knew he had a party. I love the story about the brain from Prepare to Try's Let's Play. That was the Bloodborne bit from last week.
Yeah.
I mean, it's technically RKG, but it's the same people. Prepare to Try became RKG. It's the same people. I never heard that before, and it made me laugh my ass off. I've played a bit of Assassin's Creed 3, and I agree it's definitely a not. I don't think it even got as far as J-Monster did. Keep up the excellent podcast, guys. As for a question... what were your favorite GameCube games? Mine have to be split between the original Resident Evil remake and Eternal Darkness. I would love to hear your thoughts. All the best, Matt with 1T, aka Matt Davies.
Nice. Thank you for that.
Yeah.
Favorite GameCube games? Probably Metroid Prime.
The first one, though, right?
Yeah, the first one, yeah. Casting my mind back because I didn't have a GameCube for that long, but.
Oh.
Probably Wind Waker. I really enjoyed Wind Waker when I played that. And although it wasn't exclusive to GameCube, I played Splinter Cell on the GameCube.
Right, okay.
And I did enjoy that, but it wasn't an exclusive GameCube game.
No, I mean, I'm not a stealth guy, but I've heard from people that Splinter Cell was an Xbox game.
Yes, it was originally Xbox.
And the original Xbox version was apparently light years ahead of both the PS2 and the GameCube version.
Yeah, I think
it was lighting.
The lighting. It was developed for Xbox.
Yeah,
I enjoyed the GameCube version.
Nice.
And also, probably a bit controversial. I quite like Star Fox Adventures, but a lot of people hate that game. I wouldn't say it was my favourite, but I did enjoy it.
Did you finish it?
I did finish it, yeah.
All right, cool. I mean, it's kind of Star Fox does Zelda.
Yeah, kind of. I enjoyed it. You know, a lot of people who like Fox McCloud like, no, this is a rubbish game, blah, blah, blah. I enjoyed my time with it.
So. Yeah. I mean, so that's the last Rare game they ever made on a Nintendo platform.
Mm-hmm.
It's the last one they finished before Microsoft bought them for $180 million.
That's right. Which
seems like a very small amount.
Doesn't it?
Yeah, considering we're in the days of, like, Bethesda buyouts being, like, however many billion.
Multi-billions, yeah.
Like, $180 million for Rare seems like jump change these days. But I think Star Fox Adventures looks really good.
It looked really good on the GameCube. It's one of the best-looking GameCubes that I played.
Mm.
And I did enjoy my time with it.
The main thing I remember in that game, can you play Fetch with the little dinosaur?
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
Like, your little pet guy, your little who follows you around, you can play Fetch with him. So I remember spending way too much time playing Fetch. but I don't think I ever finished it. I think I put about 20-odd hours into that game.
No, I definitely finished it, yeah. Because it was one game at a time in those days. You know, kids were very young and I had to do gaming time as and when I could.
Yeah.
So, you know, Star Fox Adventures was just one of those ones that you could play for 10, 15 minutes or one that you could play for a couple of hours. So, yeah.
There's no spaceships in that at all. None of the normal sort of Star Fox kind of gameplay.
It's all land-based, going from areas to areas, like completing quests and that kind of thing.
So. And it was also originally an N64 game.
Didn't know that.
That Star Fox wasn't in.
Wow.
So it was originally called Dinosaur Planet.
Right. And they rejigged it for the GameCube.
Had its own main character for the N64. And then it got pushed to GameCube. And as far as I'm aware, it was Shigeru Miyamoto that told Rare to put Star Fox into it and change the main character into Star Fox.
Wow.
And so they did.
Yeah. Star Fox Adventures.
Mm.
I don't think there's any modern way to play that either, is there? Probably not.
Unfortunately, no. I don't think I've got my copy anymore. I think I had an American copy,
mm-hmm.
and I think I sold it after I didn't finish it.
Yeah, fair enough.
I sort of decided I was done with it. I don't think I've even got it anymore. But like you said, there's not anywhere to play it anymore. Unfortunately.
No. What about your favourite?
Oh God, yeah. I was
top three-ish.
All right. Oh, okay, top three. That's hard. I mean, you already said Metroid Prime, so I won't. Yep. Say that one just to
you said Resi 4.
Yeah, so obviously it was going to be in the top three.
No, one more then.
oh, well, you said Metroid Prime, so Resi 4 plus two more, surely.
Two more.
Okay, so Resi 4, F-Zero GX.
Oh, yeah.
Because that game's just incredible.
Yeah, we talked about that on a few episodes ago, didn't we?
Yeah. Basically, if they put F-Zero GX onto the Switch as a HD remaster, whether it's got online play or not,
you'd be there.
I would still buy it, no question. And I'm still hoping that they'll make some sort of F-Zero game for the Switch 2, I really do.
Yeah.
And then my third one would probably be Star Wars Rogue Leader.
Rogue Leader. I did play that one, actually, yeah. Yeah, I forgot.
It was a launch game.
Yeah.
And it looked incredible for a launch game. Again, that was the GameCube game that, back at launch, when I first got the American one modified to play the Japanese one modified to play American games. I had it, I think it was November 2001 I got it, because it didn't come out over here till like, what, May 2002?
Something like that.
And I think Rogue Leader 2 was the only game I had to start off with. And so when people came around, I'd like make them play GameCube. Like, you need to try this. And yeah, it was really well done for a Star Wars sort of space. It's all ship-based. And then they did a sequel, didn't they? Rebel Strike,
yes.
Yeah, and the on-foot bits for Rebel Strike weren't as good, but Rebel Strike had the entirety of Rogue Leader 2 in that game as a two-player mode.
Oh, cool.
Which is pretty impressive.
Yeah.
And the last, I don't know if you ever finished Rogue Leader 2.
No, I think I'd moved on by the time that game came out.
Right, okay. So, yeah, Rogue Leader 2, the launch one, the very last level is like from the end of Return of the Jedi. It's fly inside the Death Star, blow up the core,
yeah,
and then get out again before it explodes.
Yeah,
and I was stuck on it for ages and ages and ages, because the other thing is the AI controls the Millennium Falcon, and you're controlling an X-wing, and you have to not buy into the Millennium Falcon and get through all the, it's very small, inside the Death Star to blow up the, you know, the middle, the core, and then get the hell out of there. And I think it took me like probably like 3 months of trying before I finally did. And then once I finally managed to do it and realized I could do it again, it kind of became like my party trick sort of thing.
All right.
I can say the party trick, but if we had a group round and we were playing stuff and Matt wanted me to show off, he'd be like, go on, finish Rogue Leader again. So I'd do it again. And it was so hard. And I think that game's got medals. You can get like gold or platinum medals on each level for if you complete the level particularly well.
Yeah.
And I remember trying to get like gold medals on every level, and it was really hard. And I definitely didn't get the platinum medal on every level. I remember that.
Yeah.
It's kind of like platinum trophies before platinum trophies were a thing, really.
Yeah. Yeah.
And my other sort of memories for GameCube, so I'm going off topic here a little bit, but I managed to get tickets for like a launch party in Manchester when GameCube was coming out in the UK. And I went with my friend Alan, who lives in Canada these days, and they had a copy of Rogue Leader there. And of course, because it was the launch of the UK, most people hadn't played it, but I already had it for 6 months. And so I played this first, it's the first level of that game is on the, it's on the Death Star from New Hope. You remember that, where you go into the trench and all that kind of thing. And the lass who had to demo it was like completely bemused, and she was like, "You're really good at this game," not knowing that I'd been playing it already for 6 months in my own time at home.
Brilliant.
And she seemed like sort of proper surprised that I like finished it on my first go.
Yeah,
blew up the Death Star and off I went. And I was dead proud of myself.
That's excellent. Oh, well, I think we're coming to the end of episode 7, haven't we?
Yeah, sorry, I did warn you that if we got onto GameCube sort of stuff, I could be there for hours. Yeah,
it might have gone a bit long this episode. So, what are our socials, Jeremy?
Yeah. So, we are Two Guys, Three Consoles on both Instagram and Blue Sky.
Yep.
For email, we are written Two Guys, Three Consoles at yahoomail.com.
Yep.
So if you want your email read out on the podcast, give us an email. My own socials is j_monster on Instagram and jmonster without the underscore on Blue Sky. What's yours? Cool.
And obviously we've got the Discord as well.
Oh yes, of course. Sorry, yeah, join the Discord.
That's new. That's a new thing.
It is. Yeah, I think
we've got Discord as well. The Discord is in the show notes. I put it on the last episode. I'll put it on every episode. So if you want to join our Discord, go and have a look at the show notes, and that'll be in there.
We've got 18 of us.
Yeah, it's growing. It's growing. Mm-hmm. There's a few posts in there. My socials are mleach26 on Instagram and mattleach1 on Blue Sky if you want to contact me there. So thank you for listening. It's been a bit of a long episode this week. Apologies if it's a bit too long for you, but I've got to edit it yet. But yeah, so we'll see you on the next one.
Yeah, thanks everybody.
Cheers. Bye.